Satch Sanders has joined us on Sports Byline USA, inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame, played his college ball at New York University. But, you know, Satch, as I talk to you here and I think about my conversations with Bill Russell, also with Bob Cousy and Sam Jones and Don Nelson over the years, your teammates on that team, I come away with an impression. And tell me if I'm right or wrong about this. One, that you all were intelligent and articulate more than just from a basketball athletic standpoint, and that added to the chemistry that made you all collectively such a great team. Am I correct about that?
Well, I think you certainly scratched the surface of something that certainly worked well for us. But one has to merely look back at that era and recognize that everyone, most of the players, I should say, had to go to college for 4 years. It wasn't only our team, though, with spokespeople like Russell and Cousy and guys like Heinsohn and Ramsey and people like that. You know, we certainly had our share of people who had a lot on the ball. But just keep one thing in mind, that period of time, 4 years of college, everyone had to go through it in order to play in the pros. And that made a big difference, or at least, you know, that's my perception.
But did your styles complement each other? I think about Bob Cousy being in the guard position and then what Sam Jones brought to the mix, Bill Russell, Don Nelson, and then even you. That to me, is what I'm talking about chemistry-wise as well.
Well, everyone, since it was Auerbach's show in terms of being coach and general manager, he dictated when your term would come. And so in the case of with Bill Sharman and Cousy as the guard duo, quarterback and shooter, you had Sam Jones and Casey Jones filling the same roles but coming off the bench. You had a player like Frank Ramsey, who certainly was kind of special at 6'4", a Kentucky Colonel, as we like to call him, really a special kind of player, but the sixth man. When he was about to step away, we picked up another sixth man in John Havlicek, about 6'5". So there was always that same kind of role playing. I was stepping in for Jim Luskatoff, okay, who was coming back and recovering from a disc injury. And you had Russell, of course, at center, and he was a stalwart. I mean, he was, as they say, always there. And then, of course, we just waited our turn to be able to get in the games and play.
Tell me about the first time you ever met Red Auerbach, and was that before you got drafted?
Yeah, Red Auerbach came into my life one day when in high school. And no, it wasn't high school. That was Leipzig at that time. But he came into my life in college, and he just basically said, keep playing the same way you're playing, kid. Keep being aggressive, okay? We like that. And that was it. That's what he said to me, I think, in my sophomore year. That was the last time. No, junior year. That was the last time I heard of and from Will Red until I was drafted by the Celtics in the first round in 1960. Red certainly was in charge. There was never any question about that. It was an ownership situation that said, Red, you're running basketball. You've got it. It's your program. And run it, he did.
There were a lot of myths about him. What were some of the truths about him, Satch?
Well, the biggest thing is that he not only did he win more games than he lost as a coach, but the other side of it was that he had more major and accomplished and good talent decisions from the general manager perspective. You know, he was I always thought he was way ahead of the game. Red started drafting players: Jim Luskatoff, Russell, Casey Jones. Sam Jones also, and Havlicek, myself. If you notice, all of the players that I've mentioned, all could score. But the biggest thing they could do was also play the other end of the court, defense. And what that did was give the Celtics, obviously we had Russell, but with drafting the kind of players that he drafted, it put a defensive bent on the Celtic team. All able to score with any teams in the league. However, being able to play a stronger game, a stronger brand of defense, put us way ahead of the opposition. The other thing he did, if I may,
sure.
He also made sure that everyone had to be in shape the first part of the season, starting with the first game. And in many times the league, you had teams that worked themselves into condition slowly but surely, so that by about the 10th game, 15th game, all the teams in the NBA were in good shape. Well, by then, we were 22-2, 18-4. We were way ahead of the game, and with no team having a chance to catch up with us.
Was Red a benevolent dictator, or was he just a dictator?
Red was a good guy. Red was a lot of fun. Not on the court, and certainly not when he was plying his trade. But off the court, he had a heck of a sense of humor. I used to go by his office at about 8 o'clock in the morning and let him tell me how I should be investing the very few thousands of dollars that he was paying me. You know, we had some interesting conversations. He had no problem at all also taking advice from players. You could not give him directions during the game. You certainly could not do that in practice, but you could certainly do it before practice. And he would weigh what you had to say, and if he felt up to it, he would insert the suggestions, be it a play or an option or whatever, into the game. And he would give you credit for it and have you, in many cases, have that player show or teach it. And that's one of the things that made Red an extraordinarily canny manager of people. He had no problem letting you have input.
Hall of Famer Satch Sanders is with us. We're talking about his career and his life with the Boston Celtics. Satch, I know Bill Russell has been very candid about how he felt about Boston during that particular time, and I worked in the market, and I know it was not a very tolerant city. I mean, it's Catholic Irish primarily up there. What was it like for the players to play up there and the success they had? How did they interact with the city, and how did the city and the people interact with the players?
Well, you know, one of the first things you want to take a look at, it was particularly in the 50s, that was a hockey town, clearly. And when we were getting, when they were getting 14,900 or 15,000 people into the Garden for the Boston Bruins, we were averaging something like 7,000 to max 8,000 at the same, during the same time period. It wasn't until, I guess, in the 70s, slowly but surely, Celtic basketball really began to keep the fan interest totally during the regular season. Up to that point, we were not the draw in the Boston Garden. As far as the city was concerned, having traveled pretty much the entire country, when you start talking about racial difficulties and problems, you're talking about America, period. If people have a habit of looking at the Boston scene, and it really stood out because of the school desegregation issues, that really put them on the map. But outside of that, there isn't one city, not a single one, that we didn't run into some problems with on the road. Not one.
Did that bother the players a great deal?
No, we had business to take care of. That was on the court between those lines. We had to, if I'm worrying about issues off the court and I'm guarding somebody like Bob Pettit, I might as well just walk off the court because he's going to get 60 instead of the 30 that he's only going to get. Elgin will wind up breaking scoring records on my, but if all I'm thinking about is off the court issues. When I was off the court, those issues were very important. No question about it. Having racial problems, name calling, going through all the scenes that blacks were going through during those times, it was difficult, to put it mildly. But once you were on the court, you really had no time to think about that.
We have a minute left, and I'm just wondering, as you think back upon the period of time that you played professional basketball, your teammates, the championships that were won, what is it that means the most to Satch Sanders?
Well, I met a great group of guys, and that's what I like most about the Celtics. That's what I remember most about the games. You know, it's great to talk about the wins, the championships, and et cetera. All very important, no question about it. There were serious milestones in my life. But to have had the opportunity to spend time with Russ, Sam, and Casey Jones, Heinsohn, Kuz, and Sharman, and all those guys, hey, and Havlicek was my roommate for a while. And hey, I got to tell you, that's a camp relationship with Nelson for 37 years. Fantastic. And as most people will attest to, I think, life is about people anyway. I mean, the money's always important, and so are the jobs. but you can't beat people.
Satch, I want to thank you. You deserve to be in the Hall of Fame, and I was looking forward to this conversation with you. You and the other Celtics during that period of time, a dynasty that I don't think will ever be matched in professional basketball. Thank you, sir, and again, congratulations for the Hall of Fame honor.
Ron, thank you, and you take care.
Satch Sanders with us, elected to the Basketball Hall of Fame, first-round pick back in 1960 by the Boston Celtics, and Red Auerbach went on to play 13 years, all of those with the Boston Celtics, and eight times he was an NBA champion, and only his teammates Bill Russell and Sam Jones have won more championship rings during their playing career. We'll take a break as we continue with more of You and Sports Byline.